We're at that order of business, adoption of conference committee reports. The first report for our consideration is Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 on House Bill 124, Chairman Korberg.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, I move adoption of Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 to House Bill 124, and I ask you to vote aye. Mr. Speaker, this conference committee was about House Bill 124, which is National Guard Emergency Deployment Professional Licensing, and the Senate had added some language in that was a little broader, gave a little bit more flexibility to the Department of Military in these situations. And we went and met with the body down the hall. And we realized that after looking at our piece of legislation as it came out, it was pretty restrictive. And we came up with some compromise language that did what we wanted to, but also gave them the flexibility to accomplish what they needed to. So I would encourage, I'd stand for questions or encourage the body to vote aye.
Any questions? We are voting on Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 to House Bill 124. A majority of the members elected is required to adopt the report. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbuto. Berger. Berger. Blake.
Aye.
Blickrey.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft excused. Davison excused. Edmonds.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Esquivel. Freeman.
Gay.
Gay excused. Gingery. Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Green excused. Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey excused. Hunt excused. Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparic excused. Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller excused. Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley excused. Pedersen excused. Peterson.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlick.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Vronish.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Gingery.
Excuse.
Gingery excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 49 ayes, 11 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 to House Bill 124. The next report for our consideration is Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 on Senate File 23, Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move Joint Conference Committee Number 1 to Senate File 23 and ask you to vote aye. We did meet with the body down the hall, came to an agreement that the House amendment that took out a paragraph should be left in, but then they agreed that the word habitate was not the right word, and inhabit was the correct word. So we did come to a meeting of the minds. I'd ask for an aye vote.
We are voting on Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 to Senate File 23. A majority of the elected members is required to adopt the report. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barbuto. Berger,
aye.
Blake,
aye.
Flickrey,
aye.
Bonner,
aye.
Botten,
aye.
Brechtel,
aye.
Brown,
aye.
Burkhart,
aye.
Byrd,
aye.
Campbell,
aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft excused. Davison excused. Edmonds.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay excused. Gingery excused. Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Green excused. Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey excused. Hunt excused. Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi. Kasparic excused. Croker. Crone. Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller excused. Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley excused. Pedersen excused. Peterson.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Simlek.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson. Stubson,
no.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Braunisch,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 48 ayes, 1 no, 11 excused.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report Number 1 to Senate File 23. We are at that order of business appointment of conference committees. Conference Committee for Senate File 59 will be Brown, Chair, Representatives Barbudo, and Goggles. Conference Committee for Senate File 101 will be Teeters, Chair, Representatives Bonner and Green. We're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Please move Senate File 91 and Senate File 47 to below Senate File 144. That's because the Labor Committee is off the floor and they wanted to either present or participate in those bills. So Senate File 91, Senate File 47, down below Senate File 144. Ladies and gentlemen, if we're going to get through the work that we need to do, we need to get through Senate File 144 this afternoon if we can. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move the House resolve itself into Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House has resolved into Committee of the Whole. Representative Stubson.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 33. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 33, introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to state parks and cultural resources, state parks and acquisition of lands. This bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Davison, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson. No, Yagi, Senator Representative McComey, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Esquivel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman McComey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 33 do pass, and I further recommend or move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. And, Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment number one is what we did is we said any money that's left over after this fund is after they've done their work would revert back to the general fund. With that, if there's any question on that amendment, I'll stand for any question or call for the question.
The question having been called on Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 33, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has passed Committee of the Whole.
And Mr. Chairman, after the explanation of the Standing Committee Amendment number 2, I would turn the explanation of the bill over to the good lady from the land of the Tetons.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment number 2 to Senate File 33 and ask for your favorable aye. Ladies and gentlemen, this is some of the work we've been doing in appropriations where we just changed the funding so that it's more transparent. It's coming out of the general fund rather than the budget reserve account, and would ask for your favorable aye.
The question having been called on Standing Committee Amendment number 2 to Senate File 33, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 2 has passed Committee of the Whole. We're back on the bill.
Oh.
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a four-page information sheet on your desk for Senate File 33, which is acquisition of lands for state parks. We've got two different parcels that we'll be talking about during the bill. The first one, Section 1, Number A, which is on line 11 of the first page, deals with Guernsey State Park. And if you turn to the back of the four sheets, Guernsey State Park has some of the finest work of the Civil Conservation Corps in the nation, including picnic shelters, overlooks, trails, roads, and as you can see in this picture, a golf course in the rough. If you look at the red line sort of down the middle of the picture, everything to the left is already part of the park, and everything to the right of the red line is not part of the park. There's a little square, a kind of light pink square on the bottom right-hand side that's currently owned by the Wyoming military, by the National Guard. And they're willing to turn this parcel over, and actually they want to turn this parcel over to Guernsey State Park. For the time being, the park will not do anything with the land. They're not going to move their boundary fence. They're not going to do any architectural or archaeological surveys. But they would like to acquire the land while they have the opportunity to do it, and there will be no money changing hands between those two entities. So that's the first parcel. The second parcel has to do with Kurt Gowdy State Park. And this on the bill, if you go to page 2, line 6, and then on the four-page fact sheet, go to page 2. Everything in the red lines is currently Kurt Gowdy State Park. Kurt Gowdy has grown more rapidly in the last 5 years than any other state park in the system. And most summer weekends, they turn away visitors and campers. A lot of that is because of the proximity to Laramie and Cheyenne, and a lot of it is because of the proximity to the Colorado Front Range. So we get a lot of visitors up here buying gas, buying groceries, as well as visiting the park. There aren't any more suitable areas within the park to build more campsites. The second issue with that park is that a private donor agreed to put up $900,000 to develop a visitor center at Kurt Gowdy State Park, but it was contingent upon the state matching funds. The state did that last session and put aside the money, so the funding mechanisms are all there, but there's really no appropriate place to put the visitor center. So what the second part of the bill intends to do is to purchase the section in green, again on the second page of the four-page handout. The section in green would be purchased from the state park system, purchased from the school trust to the state park system. So it would give us a place to build the visitor center, and it would also give us 50% more camping spaces in that park. So that would be 75 more camping spaces. The way it would work financially, $595,600 is the current estimated amount that would appraise for, and that would come out of the general fund and go into the common school permanent land fund. We currently have a grazing lease on that property, so we would lose several hundred dollars a year in the grazing lease, but we would make about $26,000 more a year in camping revenue, not including the tourist revenue from people coming into the state and so forth. So with that explanation, I will stand for any questions.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly rise in support of this because as you look over the events we have within the state of Wyoming, we pump millions of dollars into our tourism to show them things in Wyoming. And one of the things that's crucial is that we have state parks to show them. In Uinta County, we have two state parks that are visited substantially, and I know throughout the state we have others. This is an additive, and one of the things that's critical is acquisition of this land while it's readily available, not only from the military department, but from adjacent neighbors, coupled with this one benefactor that says, if you folks will step up, I'll give you the $900,000. I think it's a win-win situation. Would encourage the body to definitely support this legislation.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and in favor of the Senate file, but I do have a question about Guernsey and this so-called historic golf course. Where did historic come in that name?
Representative Brechtel.
Incidentally, I tried to play it last summer.
Thank you.
Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just offering a different point of view, it would be kind of interesting to know if there would be any opportunities to actually expand the free enterprise system, make this available for lease for the same kind of opportunities for tourism. But I would suggest that we don't need to expand government, expand our ownership of in the park system, but let's try leasing to free enterprise as just one thought against the bill.
Chairman Korber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did just have one question on the Kurt Gowdy piece, and was there any discussion in committee? Will the operating costs go up as a result of the new acquisition and the new building of the visitor center? We probably discussed that last year, but I was just curious if there was we were going to need to see additional funds and additional personnel. Thank you.
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regard to expanding government, it is a relatively small addition to the park. We do not expect there to be significant increase in personnel or costs of managing the park because we already have those mechanisms in place. We will be adding more camp spaces, but again, that should generate about $26,000 a year. We are purchasing the land from the government itself, and so there's really no addition of state lands, and the funds are being transferred from one government agency to another government agency. As far as actually developing the land, that would be, from what I understand from our committee, it would be part of the regular park budget, that they would fold that into their normal budget for maintaining and building up park services.
Any further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman McComey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 33 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 33 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 79. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 79, introduced by Senator Case, an act relating to the Recreation Safety Act waiver on behalf of minors. This bill was referred to committee number one, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Brechtel, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne, excused, Brown, signed, Representative Brechtel, Vice Chair.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Brown?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 79 do pass. And, Mr. Chairman, at this time I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All that Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 does is recognize the fact there are lots of ways to slide down a hill. The statute accounts for Nordic or Alpine skiing and snowboarding, and I simply wanted to include any other ways of sliding down the hill that might exist, like these little bicycle things, and there's some other contraptions that people occasionally use. So Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 simply adds in and other alpine sports. And, Mr. Chairman, I call for the question on Committee of the Whole Amendment.
Question being called. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 79 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 is passed Committee of the Whole. Chairman Brown.
And, Mr. Chairman, on Senate File 79, this is existing law that weighs the inherent risks of certain recreational activities, and it's merely adding in a couple of things. It's adding in snowboarding and adding in outdoor education programs, and then by virtue of the Committee of the Whole Amendment we just passed, it also adds in other alpine sports. And then in 123, which is the assumption of risk, the actual waiver of risks inherent in recreational sports, it adds a paragraph D that makes the assumption of risk provisions in this law applicable irrespective of the age of the person assuming the risk. And I'd stand for questions, Mr. Chairman, or if not, call for the question.
Any other discussion on the bill? The question being called on Senate File 79. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 79 do pass, signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. Senate File 79 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 134. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 134, introduced by Senator Perkins, an act relating to liens. This bill was sent to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Brechtel, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne, excused, Brown, signed, Representative Brechtel, Vice Chair.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Brown?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File Number 134 do pass. And for an explanation of the bill, I would turn it over to the representative from District 11.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As members of the 60th will remember, former members of the 60th, we had an extensive lien bill sometime in our lifetime that was about 30 pages long. This bill is simply a cleanup to that effort. If you look at page 2 of the bill, we're simply clarifying that notice can be mailed by first-class mail as well as certified mail. That's just easier to process. And then the only other change is in the forms. The forms that were part of that lien bill were probably the most important feature. If you look on page 4, we need to make a change, and this, what you have on pages 3 and 4 is our sample forms that were put in the statute. Those sample forms had an inconsistency with the statutory language, so the purpose of the change on page 4 is to make it match other statutory language. And if there are no questions, I would call for the question.
The question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that Senate File 134 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 134 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 45. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 45, introduced by Senator Case, an act relating to professional services procurement. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yagi, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Stubson, excused, Shepperson, sign representing Illaway, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Illaway?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 45 do pass, and the representative from House District 14 will discuss the bill.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, this is a modification to one of a series of statutes that has a short name. Well, it says short title in the title of the statute, the Professional Architectural Engineering and Land Surveying Services Procurement Act. And within that act is this Section 1031 that discusses selection procedures, and this would be a small change under selection procedures that would say that when selecting one of these professional people, in addition to the elements that are already there, another element that could be taken into consideration by the agency head is the residency of the professional. And then it goes on and puts a little caveat at the end of the bill and says, for purposes of this, residency does not require satisfaction of the elements in 166101A1. That's all about residency for contractors and all that sort of thing. We're not driving it to that level. But we're simply saying with this amendment that when an agency head is making a decision about a professional, that he can take into consideration the residency. And the way I see it in my mind is if everything else being equal and you had two applicants equally qualified and one of our state agencies had said, well, I've got two here that are equally qualified, but one's a resident of Wyoming and the other's not, as the law stands now, it would be impermissible for him to decide on that basis. And this would simply let him say, okay, everything else being equal, I'm taking the guy from Wyoming. So I'd stand for questions on the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion? The question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 45 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 45 has passed Committee of the Whole. We are now on Senate File 72. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 72, introduced by Senator Christensen, an act relating to the Fair Practices Equipment Act. This bill was sent to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Botten, Kennedy, McKim, Peterson, Korberg, Vranish, Zwanitzer, Dave, sign representing Korberg, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Korberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 72 do pass. And, Mr. Chairman, I further move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and this is very important, and I ask you to vote no on the Standing Committee Amendment. And let me explain that before I turn the explanation of the bill over to its sponsor. If you will go to page 2 of your bill, this is what happens when a committee decides they are smarter than our LSO attorneys. We thought the language one or more on page 2, line 14, was new language, and in fact, it had been added last year and showed up in the supplement, and we missed that. So I did move the amendment, but right now I need to call for the question, and I ask you to defeat the amendment because that language is not new language. We added it last year. So for that, I would call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
The question being called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 72. All in favor signify by saying aye. All opposed, no.
No.
This was a trick question. We have defeated Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 72, and we're back on the bill. Chairman Korver.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to explain the explanation of the bill, turn it over to the good sponsor of the bill from House District 30.
Representative Botten.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring you Senate File 72 as a co-sponsor of this bill. Now, we already have on the books the, as you've heard, the Fair Practices of Employment Act. And what this did was to identify and define certain equipment in the economy that when a dealership exists, that's between the manufacturer of that certain equipment and the, of course, the Wyoming dealer selling it, under certain circumstances, the dealer may cancel the contract upon 30 days' notice, and under the terms of the existing law, also require the manufacturer to purchase back the inventory, including the equipment. Now, as I understand it, some of you folks were here when originally this act passed. It was designed, in essence, to protect Wyoming dealers, say when the economy goes down, and what may be called forced inventory situations arise, other people call predatory business practices arise, where the manufacturers, who are, by the way, out-of-state entities, would like to keep their labor force on the job and manufacturing equipment, and then forcing that equipment upon Wyoming dealers. Well, that arose, again, with a different kind of equipment, and that's the basis of the amendment to the Fair Practices of Equipment Act that's before you today. And I thought about reading a long email I received from a dealer in my area of the state. I chose not to. I thought I could just shorten it up a little bit. By background, what ended up happening before session started is several folks on both sides of the aisle of the hallway here were contacted by local dealers, businessmen in their areas of the state, complaining about, with the downturn in the economy in 2009, they're having manufacturers of snowmobiles dump product on them, and they had no choice but to accept that equipment. The dealer in my area of the state, for example, took delivery of 20 snowmobiles in 2009, was only able to sell 8, already had left over from the prior year. And as the coming winter approached, was required to take additional product at their dealer, even though they couldn't sell it, even though they couldn't protest to the manufacturer, hey, we're not selling your product. The manufacturer is forcing them to take the snowmobiles and the inventory. So as the several individuals in the legislature approached the smart attorneys next door, we found out that there were already several workings of a bill to try to correct the situation. So to the bill itself, the meat of it is on page 2. As written, it had a capital A heading and a capital B heading, which in the draft bill here is now marked as D on line 12. So as it exists today, it covers all train vehicles, and it covers other machinery, equipment, implements, etc., which are then shown on the next, the rest of page 2 and the page 3. First thing that we found was that the definition under capital A at the top of the page 2, all train vehicles, that's really not anything in the statutes that define what that is. So what we did is broke that down into two separate headings. One, multi-purpose vehicles, which has a definition in the statutes, and the other, off-road recreational vehicles, which has a definition in the statutes. So this is going to cover those four-wheelers. We had a bill before us earlier, I don't remember how many weeks before, to try to redefine what multi-purpose vehicles are. So the purpose of this bill is to change all-terrain vehicles into multi-purpose vehicles and off-road vehicles, which do have proper definitions. The second purpose was to add snowmobiles with the definition in statute. Now, we heard testimony in committee about this from certain individuals about how these predatory business practices were affecting people. We heard testimony about a certain lawsuit in one area of the state. We heard some testimony about Wyoming businessmen essentially having to sell off inventory at 1,000 or 2,000 below inventory price or manufacturer's suggested price just to get rid of the product so they don't go bankrupt. Others are just plain going out of business. We just felt that adding snowmobiles was a fair thing so that they'd find protection under this law that already exists. We heard testimony in committee that other states do the same thing. And if you will, it's sort of like, let's get with the program and protect our people as other states protect their people. So I'll stand for questions, and to the best extent possible, I'll try to answer them. Thanks.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First thing, I would like to declare a conflict on this bill. But now that I've declared my conflict, I would like to share just a brief overview of, as a dealer affected by this product, how this would affect dealers like myself. And we went through an issue with one of our brands about 7 years ago. It was a snowmobile manufacturer. We were coming off a year where we had sold 13 snowmobiles, had 7 left over in stock, and they informed us that we needed to order a minimum of 32 or they were going to cancel our franchise agreement. And through getting some lawyers involved, we were able to get them to agree to at least take back the 7 that we had in stock, so it didn't cost us any money. What this protection would in this bill would do is it wouldn't change the fact that a manufacturer could still impose those terms on a dealer. They would still be able to come forward and say, here's the expectations. If you don't meet them, we're going to cancel you as a dealer. But what it would do is give the dealer some recourse, where if they get canceled, it would at least require the manufacturer to come take the excess inventory off their hands. And that same brand that I dealt with 7 years ago is currently in the process of terminating 2 dealers here in Wyoming that I've been in contact with. One of them has already lost over $70,000 in the process because what this manufacturer has decided to do, instead of taking back the product, they're fighting them, but they really make it an unfair playing field. So a dealer has leftover inventory. One dealer I talked to had about 30, between 30 and 40 snowmobiles left in stock. They were canceled. They were told they're no longer a dealer for this manufacturer. And what that meant was they're no longer, according to the manufacturer, authorized to sell their product, but they're stuck with 30-some snowmobiles. So the manufacturer has informed them that they are not allowed to offer the warranty that goes with them. So when a consumer goes to buy it from that dealer, the dealer has to inform them that we're not authorized to sell the snowmobile to you, so the normal 1-year manufacturer's warranty that you get that covers parts and labor, that's now void because we're an unauthorized seller of this product. Also, the manufacturer has some very large rebates on some of those snowmobiles, up to $2,000 and $3,000. But that dealer does not get to offer those rebates to his customer because, again, he's not an authorized dealer. And then that dealer is no longer allowed to order parts to be able to work on or fix the snowmobiles when they break. So when a customer comes to a store, he effectively has to tell them, well, I've got this snowmobile, but if you go and buy it from another dealer down the road or out of state, he can sell it to you for $3,000 cheaper because he's got a rebate that he can't offer you or that I can't offer you. And also, if you buy it from him, you'll get a 1-year warranty on the product, but if you buy it from me, your warranty is null and void. And, oh, by the way, if you buy it from me, you're going to have to take it to that other dealer to work on it because I'm not allowed to work on it because I can't order parts for it. So this bill would just provide protection where if the manufacturer is going to come in and cancel you as a dealer, they would at least have to take back the product that they're telling you you're not authorized to sell.
Chairman Brown.
And, Mr. Chairman, I would just add that's a familiar story. It's exactly the same story we heard about implement dealers, which was the impetus for this act in the first place. So adding these people to it just eliminates the same abusive practices toward them that we eliminated toward implement dealers when we originally put this in place.
Okay, question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Korberg's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 72 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate File 72 is passed Committee of the Whole. And we are now on Senate File 51. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 51, introduced by Senator Scott, an act relating to motor vehicles regarding safety belt violations. This bill was sent to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Kennedy, McKim, Peterson. No, Korberg, Bronish, Swanitzer, Dave. Conflict, Botten. Signed, Representing Korberg, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Korberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 51 do pass, and I further move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to take a moment and explain the Standing Committee Amendment and ask for your favorable vote on that Standing Committee Amendment on page 2 of the bill, lines 10. It was the desire of the committee that if we were going to raise the fine for the driver, that we also raise the fine for the passengers. So we merely struck the word $10, and the fine for the passenger would be $25 per person. So I would stand for questions on the Standing Committee Amendment. Otherwise, I would call for the question.
Are there any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment? Okay, the question being called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 51. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Senate File, the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 51 has failed.
Vision.
Vision being called for. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand.
Municipal court sometimes, and this might doesn't line my pocket. What?
You're conscientious.
It is.
We're going to stand at ease for just a couple of minutes until the sound of the gavel. Okay, we are back on Senate File 51, and we are now on the bill unless someone wants to move the Committee of the Whole amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Korberg.
Yes, I'd like to move the explanation of the bill over to my good colleague from House District 15.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 51 is a modification to the current seatbelt law. The modification comes in on the amount of fine you would get if you're not wearing a seatbelt if you have been stopped for another violation. If you remember, this is a secondary law that you must be stopped for another moving violation before you could be cited for not wearing a seatbelt. That change increases the fine from $25 to $75 that could be assessed. The other change is to give municipalities, local boards, those people who have the right to set vehicle laws, the ability to provide an exception to this rule, to the statute, for things such as parades, where the vehicles are moving very slowly, where you may have people riding on a float who don't have seat belts. And that's pretty much a summary of it as it exists.
Representative Botten.
Mr. Chairman, declaring conflict.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment number one. Okay, to explain this, I guess, just so the body knows, I kind of hearken back to my youth in the early 80s driving around Sheridan and Johnson County roads with the radio on and the windows down and unfortunately not my seatbelt. And just so you know, I've changed my ways. 2 years in the military, I wear my seatbelt. I teach my children to wear that seatbelt, and I think that is a good thing. When I look at this bill, I see that just the sponsors on this, the idea of the overall safety of the people of the state of Wyoming set in their heart. And so they're raising the penalty to encourage us to use our seatbelt, but our bill exists as a club and a carrot. And so my amendment simply proposes that if we're going to triple the size of the club, it only be appropriate to triple the size of the carrot and encourage that exact same behavior through the encouragement by increasing the rebate, I guess I'll call it, from $10 to $30, tripling that, and would encourage your support on this amendment.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment number one. Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is a good idea. I like the idea it's a carrot rather than a hammer. My only concern was, and I was just a question to the good sponsor of the amendment, if you'd had a chance to look through the bond schedule, because it's for any violation, any moving violation, I'm just wondering, do we have any moving violations where if you're subtracting 30, we're actually going to owe the person money? So that was a concern, especially if it's a municipal ordinance. I know some of those are lower.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, I cannot speak to the municipal ordinances, but my understanding is, and I will not stake my reputation on this, is that our lowest bond rate is $45, and the good majority floor leader just provided me verification that it is, in fact, $45. So we would not be making money by driving around slightly speeding with our seatbelt on.
Is there any more discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment number one? The question being called, all those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number one to Senate File 51 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment one to Senate File 51 has passed Committee of the Whole, and we are back on the bill. Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rising on and against the bill, we see these attempts every year. If we somehow raise a fine, our people will somehow be safer. And I never have quite understood that logic. I haven't seen one shred of ounce of evidence or study that says that if we raise this, we will increase seatbelt usage by even one person. And all we're doing is being big government again, raising fines. I would urge you to vote no.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill was one of the ones that came out of, and I can't tell you that by the sponsorship, but I can tell you that it was discussed quite at length at the Workforce Safety Task Force. And as they looked at why does Wyoming have one of the highest death rates among their employees of any state in the union. And so in order to understand why, they first had to discover what caused the accidents. And from my recollection, and please forgive me if I don't get the number exactly right, it was about 80% of the deaths were caused as a result of traffic accidents, whether it was on the highway or whether it was on the dirt road to the rig. This idea was actually the only one that came out of that task force. And the whole purpose of this is to help change the culture in Wyoming. You know, we've got a lot of cowboys in Wyoming. We cherish our reputation as cowboys, and not just people who ride horses, but people who have that independent spirit. And they said in Wyoming, you have foremen that do things the way they've always done things because that's the way you do it. And that there's a lot of the culture of pulling up your bootstraps and getting to work anyway. And a lot of culture of calling people sissies if they followed all of the rules and regs without safety violations. But this was one thing that came out of there that they thought would make the biggest difference, and that is that if people actually wore their seatbelts, that it would decrease the death rate among employees in Wyoming. Thank you.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, and taking off from what the good chairman of labor was just saying, I'm going by memory here, but it seemed like they brought in statistics last year at this time that verified that the higher the fine, the better the compliance rate. And it was pretty convincing statistics. And to me, that's the important thing to look at here is if the size of the fine makes a difference, and we are, you know, their findings was we have a lot of accidents that happen and personal injuries that happen because of the seatbelt, then I think that, you know, this makes sense. I hate to disagree with the good chairman of the education department, but as I remember, this was discussed. And then as long as I'm on that, I didn't get up here fast enough to complain about that Committee of the Whole amendment. That it seems like in setting the size of the rebate or of the forgiveness of the other offense, that we need to keep cognizant that we shouldn't do that unless the lessening of the seriousness of the other offense is self-evident as a result of this. In other words, if speeding is a $45 fine, and we're going to rebate, or $40 fine, or whatever it happens to be, and we're going to rebate $25 instead of rebating $10 like we did now, are we saying that speeding is a lesser lesser in seriousness than it was before? And there may be some, I don't know if we'll find city offenses, where the fine might be equal to $25 or $30 or $25 like the... Or no, it's $30, isn't it? We might have a municipal fine that's $30, and the result of reducing that fine reduces the fine to zero, which, you know, kind of puts the city judge or the magistrate in kind of an embarrassing situation here, that you committed an offense, but we don't recognize it as an offense. We're just going to zero it out. So I think... I'd like some discussion on these issues. Thank you.
Representative Barbuto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I just don't see anything in this bill that's going to change the culture around seatbelt usage in Wyoming. And I think our goal here is to get us to a point where we have less deaths, less accidents that are the result of not using a seatbelt. So I think if we're going to get serious about that, then we need to reject this today, because otherwise, when we find out that this fine's not made a difference, we're just going to come back in 5, 6, 7, 10, 20 years and keep raising these fines. I think we found with other things that raising fines doesn't change anything. The certainty of punishment does. So today, let's reject this, because it won't change anything. At least that's my opinion. I don't think this will change anything in those regards. And come back with something that will change those statistics, and that's a primary seatbelt law. This is kind of a... poor compromise, I think, but on and against the bill.
Chairman Semlich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My comments reflected much in what our last speaker had to say. You know, when I come down to the session before I go, what people tell me probably more than anything else is, please resist this nanny state legislation. And And I'm not sure what their motivation is for telling me that, but I can tell you what my motivation is for not supporting this bill. And it really has to do with kind of retraining the culture. And I'll tell you that I believe in seat belts. I'm not going to argue with the statistics. I encourage my family members, my children, my grandchildren, they wear seat belts. I'm not debating that issue. And while it has a part in this bill, more significant to me is really the discussion about how do we retrain our culture, and how do we allow people to make personal decisions and be personally responsible for the decisions that they make. And when, in fact, something happens that has a very poor outcome, to me, it's more significant way to retrain our culture to understand the importance of doing the things that we choose to do, as opposed to what government would have us do. So I would resist this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have one question for the sponsor, and that has to do with Section G. And I'm wondering how many people have been cited for not wearing seatbelts while participating in a parade or other slow-moving activity in the state.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The exact number I don't know, but I do know I wasn't. So that's the only actual fact I can give you.
Representative Ronish.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, you know, to answer that question, there's motivation for people to do that because, unfortunately, one gal fell off of a wagon in a parade and was run over. But I'm not talking about that. What I came up here to talk about is, you know, we're talking about saving lives, and I agree that we should all wear seatbelts. But if saving lives is the only reason we have to have laws, then we can never have enough laws. And we all laughed when they said, you know, someday they're going to be trying to regulate the amount of sugar and colas and the amount of fat and hamburgers. And we thought that would never happen. And by golly, it's coming. You know, when you do get one thing done, there's always one more thing that needs to be done and one more thing. And I'd urge you to vote against the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm a firm believer in using seat belts. I'm owning against the bill. My wife wouldn't be here if it wasn't for seat belts. I actually installed them on the vehicle and told her the day she went down that she had that wreck to wear her seat belt. Unfortunately, she did. Also, before the good representative from District 54 brought the first seatbelt bill, I brought one, and the speaker told me that it involved the secondary or the passengers' responsibilities in there, too. And the speaker at the time told me it was the stupidest bill he had ever seen. And I think I've learned an awful lot. I was a rather young legislator at the time, but I was a young as in hadn't been in the legislature very long. Still, I was old. But the point is, I learned an awful lot. There's a personal responsibility in all this. And that's why we wound up with a secondary seatbelt bill. And again, it's a matter of personal responsibility on it against the bill.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wish I had the statistics that were provided to the committee. I don't have them with me. But testimony was introduced and statistical research information provided to us that usage of seat belts does go up with a higher fine. It is established in research. So it does work. The bill originally called for primary enforcement of seatbelts. It no longer does. I do not want it to be primary enforcement. I like secondary enforcement because I believe it's working. The same research that shows that seatbelt use goes up with higher fines, says it even goes higher with primary enforcement. I don't want to go there. But I do want to see this bill pass. It will have an effect on the use of seatbelts and ultimately will save lives. So I am supportive of the bill as it is in front of us. Thank you.
Madam Minority Whip.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I forgot. I have a title. You know, I wanted to make sure that folks actually saw that there is a handout in your box related to this, because there's a lot of language being thrown around about statistics, lack of statistics, personal responsibility. There are real costs, dollars lost, spent by the state of Wyoming due to our poor seatbelt usage. Let's just get down to brass tacks. We spend, you know, if we're going to, like, tell people or be sort of libertarian about our approach to seatbelt usage, then perhaps we should also tell folks that we won't pick up your Medicaid costs if you don't wear your seatbelt. We will not provide you disability for the rest of your life if you don't wear your seatbelt. But, of course, we can't do that. But we hired, as part of our state safety effort that's been going on for the last few years, we hired an epidemiologist to go out, gather information, and provide it to us. And while a primary seatbelt law would certainly probably improve usage more, we have to take baby steps. We can't get a primary seatbelt law passed, frankly, in either this side of the building or the other side of the building. But we do need to increase our seatbelt usage in the state of Wyoming, and it will save the state money. You know, we hired an epidemiologist to go out and research this issue for us, and now we're not willing to listen to what he's told us. He's gathered the information, and in particular, if you look at this handout that was provided, it shows that Wyoming's rate of seatbelt usage is the lowest in the country. Crash victims who are not wearing their seatbelts have medical bills that are 50% higher than crash victims who wear seatbelts. Unbelted occupants are more likely to be Medicaid patients. So we're just talking money here, folks, money that the state of Wyoming has to pay because people don't wear their seatbelts. If there's anything we can do, even if it's a modest increase in the fine, to encourage even a few people to wear their seatbelts, we are saving the state money. Now, if you don't want to do that savings, if you want to continue to spend a lot of money on Medicaid and disability, go ahead. But know that you're costing the state money by not encouraging seatbelt use. Thank you.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the good chairman of the Labor Committee said, she was on a number of the committees. I've attended those meetings also. Wyoming leads the country, is either sometimes first, sometimes second or third, but usually in that top three, in workplace fatalities. The majority of those are vehicle accidents. A large percentage of them could be prevented by people wearing seatbelts, including all of these trucks we worry about on the interstates. If this bill will take a step in providing that usage, then I'm for it. The cost, not only the dollar cost to the state, but the emotional cost to those families, to the survivors when that person is killed, is tremendous and not something most of us would want to deal with. I would encourage you to vote aye on the bill. It is a small measure, but it's a good start.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just going through my inbox looking for the handout that was referred to, and I came across another one, and it's about game and fish violations, and it just never ceases to amaze me how some of these fines can go up to $5,000 and $10,000 and years in prison for killing trophy game animals, and yet what are we doing to save lives for workers in Wyoming? A few dollars fine, a little bit more. I mean, I know it's comparing apples to oranges, but I'm just telling you that we seem to have the will to increase fines tremendously when it comes to Wyoming's wildlife, But when it comes to Wyoming's human life, we don't have the will to raise the fines that would actually make a difference in saving lives.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. An answer to the question, the good lady from the Campbell County. The Wyoming seatbelt law is a secondary law violation, and so unless they were going to pull somebody over in a parade for some type of a violation, they couldn't issue a citation for not wearing your seatbelt. But ladies and gentlemen, there's more to this. In 2000, this is an old survey or study that was done, but in 2000, they studied a national study on seatbelt usage. It says 42% of the drivers who did not use seatbelts regularly said they would definitely be more likely to wear them if the fine were increased. Another 25% of these drivers said they'd probably be more likely to wear seatbelts. I think the pocketbook dictates a little bit to you, but in my mind, common sense does a better job. Here's the issue as I see it in Wyoming. We've now had a secondary seatbelt bill for quite a few years, and we don't see the seatbelt usage increasing. And we had hoped through education, and we've done a lot of that, and other things, that we would be able to see more people use seatbelts. That doesn't seem to be happening. So I'd just like the body to think about that. I believe we passed this bill probably 8 years ago or something like that. 8 or 9 years ago was about my second or third year in the legislature when I brought the bill that we have now. And hope that something good would come of it. There has been some good of it. Seatbelt usage climbed for a little bit, and now it's stagnated. And so I'm in favor of the bill simply because I think we need to look at another option. On and for the bill.
Representative Blake. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and in support of this bill. If we raise the fine, it could make somebody pause and think, I'm going to wear my seatbelt today. Statistics show that it does do that. If it saves one life, that's enough to vote for this. I just urge you to support this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Madam Minority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also refer folks to the back of the handout that was provided to you to identify. We have law enforcement, oil and gas, mineral, children's advocates, car dealers, medical society, medical associations, a wide array of groups in support of this legislation. And so I think maybe the time has come for Wyoming to take a small step for safety.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and in favor of the bill as proposed. I suspect maybe the fine amount isn't high enough, but it's in the right direction. I was part of a large organization that didn't have a seatbelt provision in the understanding of the corporation, and so it was hard to implement. But once we implemented it, and then we had post-accident analysis, the fact that those employees had seat belts on saved lives. And so I'm all in favor of this. And I think about myself, would I, if I had a $10 fine for having a seat belt on, probably wouldn't make much difference. You get up to $35, you start to pay attention to it. So I think it's a step in the right direction. And rather than nanny state, which I think I don't like either, but I do like the fact that people are incented to do things by money, and if we can get people to use more, I think it's in the right direction. So I'd urge your support of the bill.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm opposed to this bill, and I would hope that you would be too. It is a nanny state situation. private enterprise is a much more appropriate, you know, if this is all an issue about workplace safety, I can tell you that private enterprise is already addressing this. I work for several corporations, all of which wearing your seatbelt was a condition of employment. Now that's incentive. If you think about that, if you're going to lose your job if you're not wearing your seatbelt, that's incentive. A $75 fine, which is basically just enabling local law enforcement to get, how should I say this politely, over eager with taxation by citation, then I don't think this is something that government should be a part of. I think this is a place for individual and personal responsibility and an issue for companies and groups to deal with. It's not something that we as a government should be legislating because, as has been already mentioned before, there's no end to it. We start legislating safety things, and pretty quick we're going down a slippery slope, a really slippery slope, where pretty quick the government is mandating everything from what we eat to what we wear to bed.
Mr. Speaker?
Just briefly, and I was going to try and look it up, but the Internet's down. I don't know if anybody's got a bond schedule, but you guys might want to ask yourselves what the bond schedule is on this. Because if there's a bond schedule and someone forfeits bond in lieu of appearance, which they could do for this offense, most likely your maximum of 75 is never going to be met. So I'd want to know the answer to that.
Any further discussion? The question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Korberg's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 51 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 51 has not passed Committee of the Whole. Pursuant to H.R. 10-5B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbuto.
No.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Licri.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten. Botten conflict. Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
No.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison excused. Edmonds.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Esquivel.
No.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay. Gay. Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
No.
Green.
Aye.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
No.
Illaway.
No.
Yagi. Kasparic excused. Croker.
No.
Crone.
No.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
No.
Lubno.
No.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Patton.
No.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen excused. Peterson.
No.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Simlek.
No.
Shepperson. Stewart,
no.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
no.
Throne,
aye.
Vronish,
no.
Wallace,
no.
Zwanitzer Dan,
no.
Zwanitzer Dave,
no.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 21 ayes, 35 noes, 3 excused, 1 conflict.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, Senate File 51, having failed, a roll call vote is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 138. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 138, introduced by Senator Perkins, an act relating to parental rights, child custody orders, abandonment. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Throne. No, Brechtel, Peasley. Excused, Brown. Signed, Representative Brechtel, Vice Chair.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Brown?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 138 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to the representative from District 11.
Madam Minority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The narrow purpose of this bill is to clear up a technicality in our parental termination rights. Essentially, you only have one part of the statute in front of you. I believe there are six or seven grounds for termination of parental rights. Under the one you have in front of you, Romanet 1, abandonment is defined as leaving your child in the care of another without provision for the child's support. The problem with this provision as it currently exists in statute and as it has been interpreted by the Wyoming, the judiciary, if you, say for instance you are a divorced couple, the non-custodial parent has had no contact with the child and may not even be paying child support, they have not abandoned their child under this statute because they have left their child with the custodial parent pursuant to court order. And the judiciary has said that if the child is placed, is left with another pursuant to court order, that parent isn't responsible for abandoning their child. The court created the order. So essentially all this is saying is, for purposes of this paragraph, a court order of custody shall not preclude a finding of abandonment. So again, if you have a non-custodial parent who's been out of the picture for a long time, due to court order, then you could still find abandonment. So this is just to address a technicality in the statute that's been identified by the judiciary. And I would stand for any questions.
Any questions? Any more discussion? The question being called. If I can remember. All those in favor of Representative Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that Senate File 138 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 138 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 147. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 147, introduced by Senator Dockstetter, an act relating to county sheriff's service of process fees. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yagi, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Stubson. Excused, Shepperson. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
You've heard of the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Illaway?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with recommendation that Senate File 147 do pass. There are no amendments, and the good gentleman from House District 21 will explain the bill.
Representative McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 147 simply covers a change in funding. Now, as the bill exists right now, county sheriffs can go out and serve processing papers in a county. The law states that the Board of County Commissioners can set a fee. And the fee that they're allowed to go up to the maximum right now is $35. And this bill simply changes that $35 to $50. Now, they are allowed to do that for they have to go out three times on that fee. And with the increased distances and the price of fuel that we have now, you can see that where an increase is actually needed in the amount of money that needs to be charged at this time. Also, after three times, I think the county commissioners could set the fee up to $5 for each
subsequent visit after that. And all this does is raise that fee up to $10 more. And once again, this is all in statute. All this is doing is changing the amount that the county commissioners can set in their county. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for questions, and no questions, we'll call for the questions. So,
Representative Shepherdson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the good gentleman could tell me, when was the last time these fees were increased? You may have said that, but I missed it. I'm sorry.
You know,
Representative McKim.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I did not look that up to see when the last time. I thought it was about 6-7 years ago.
Any other discussion on the bill? The question being called. All those in favor of Representative Illaway, Chairman Illaway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 147 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 147 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 85. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 85, introduced by Senator Burns, an act relating to game and fish violation penalties. This bill was referred to Committee Number 6. Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepherdson, no, Davison, sign representing McComey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman McComey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 85 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. And with that, I'd like to explain the Standing Committee amendment. If you'll look at page 2, line 15, the committee inserted after date involving the same species. And on page 3, line 8, after date, the same thing, involving the same species. And this was to clarify that if, in fact, they were out wanting to taking game animals or poaching, and they killed one of the same species, or more than one of the same species, it could only be one charge. There wouldn't be shotgunning. But if they killed that particular one type of species and another type of species, then that would be two charges. And with that, I'd stand for any questions on the amendment. Call the question.
The question being called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 85. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 85 has passed Committee of the Whole, and we're back on the bill. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the good Chairman of Labor pointed out earlier,
Mr. Point of order, I haven't explained the bill yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you very much. Well, I'd like to start you off on page 1. And what I want you to look at is this language is already existing statute. And this says any person who knowingly takes an antlered elk, antlered deer, antlered moose, antlered horned antelope, bighorn, sheep, et cetera, without the proper license during a closed season, except as otherwise permitted by this act, is guilty of a misdemeanor punishable by not more than a fine of not less than $5,000 nor more than $10,000 imprisonment or not more than for not more than 1 year or both. What is being added is for a third or subsequent conviction within 10 years of this violation of this subsection shall constitute a felony punishable by a fine of not less than $5,000 nor more than $10,000, which is already what's in the existing law. Imprisonment for not more than 2 years, which raised that up from 1 to 2, and goes on from there to show what will happen if they do this. If you go on to line 3, it's the same language, but it's under the destruction, wanton destruction of a big game animal. The language on page 2 is under the taking of certain game animals without license or during a closed session and prohibited. Now, ladies and gentlemen, what this is about these people that come in, and there's a big business in poaching. And especially if you look at the handout that was on your desk, it's in color. And that handout shows you various things that happened. One of them is on page, the second page of the handout is a very, very valuable trophy head of a mountain sheep. We were told in committee that that could sell on the market for anywhere from $50,000 to $150,000, depending on the right person that would want it. Also on that page is what other people are doing for this and about this, other states. But ladies and gentlemen, the bigger problem is why we want to move this to a felony. This is on the third time within a 10-year period. So it's not somebody going out and accidentally doing something like this. They have to knowingly do it for three times within a 10-year period. The other instance of this is if it's just a misdemeanor, as is stated in existing law right now, it's a lot more difficult to go and get some of these people that are out of state and bring them back here for a misdemeanor than it is for a felony. So that's one of the reasons we've moved to a felony on the third time that they've done this in a 10-year period of time. And I'd like you to know one other thing. In Wyoming Statute 68101 does not apply to this legislation. And this is a statute that allows a judge to add up to 10 years in a jail sentence if a felony is committed with a firearm. So we struck that out. That was not the intent of this legislation. This clause will keep the law and the maximum jail time for this felony to 2 years. And with that, I'd stand for questions.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I apologize to the good chairman of TRW. I had a bill signing at 3:30, and I was trying to move things along maybe faster than I should have. My question is how big a problem is recidivism? These are fairly extraordinary remedies, and we give Game and Fish some amazingly extraordinary remedies. They can arrest, they can search your premises without a warrant, they can confiscate your heads if they believe that they've been taken illegally. They can suspend your hunting privileges for 650,000 years. And then extraordinarily, and in a rare case in Wyoming statutes, if you look at 236208, for the two statutes that you're talking about here, they can take away, they can seize devices and equipment, including any firearm, weapon, ammunition, trap, snare, vessel, motorized vehicle, aircraft, explosive, poisonous substance, electronic device, or optical equipment. They can just seize it from you and take it away from you and sell it. So there's some fairly extraordinary remedies available already. I'm just wondering if the magnitude of the problem justifies those remedies, and I'll have to listen to the answer on the audio because I have to go to the bill signing, but I sure appreciate the answer. Thank you.
Chairman Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you listen closely, you'll hear it right now. For 4 years on TRW that I served on there, we talked about this constantly and over again. And these people are like serial killers. They are addicted to this stuff, and they are bad people. They go and it's not just the sort of incidental poaching that we see around our state. These are people many times from out of state. They come in here over and over again. They're motivated by, in some instances, by money. At other times, they're motivated by something we don't understand. They kill game in the park. They kill game in wildlife refuges. They kill game wherever they can find it. And they do it over and over again. And it's not just one animal that they typically kill. They typically kill several animals. Sometimes they have clients with them who don't mind hunting on the lam. And there seems to be no deterrent that we've put up so far that stops them. So it's not frequent. But when you find one of these people, they're a big problem, and the escalating fines haven't worked yet. At some point they will. At some point we'll put them in prison, and they can hunt something else while they're in prison. So on and for the bill.
Representative Ronish.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
talk about recidivism. We had a guy in Evanston who loved moose. And I think he had killed a total of about 12 or 13 moose. And he spent a year in jail. And that didn't stop him either. And he just liked to kill moose. And I don't know what it was about it. But I'm for this bill, too. Thank you.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been a proponent of this for, it's been here, the good chairman brought up for, we've been talking about it probably 4 years. I will tell you that we really have a problem here. The animals are most vulnerable. They're coming down out of the mountains. They're in their winter range. Big animals, and it's very tempting. And these folks that are shooting these, it's worth the risk. And one of the speakers former said they take their guns, they take their equipment, they take their vehicle. That might add up to $50,000, but if you get a Boone and Crockett head, you could sell the thing for over $100,000. So it's worth the risk to take these things when they're most vulnerable. And by the way, these animals have the best genetics that they're passing on, and they're just being killed, not in fair chase, but when they're down in the, going through the Hoback or winter range down by Cokeville, some big deer, elk, moose, bighorn sheep, and the one you have here is just a magnificent specimen. So I think it's just worth the risk to these guys, and we're not talking the first time you just made a mistake, or second time, I didn't realize the season was closed. These guys are not those type of folks. These are doing it on purpose for the thrill of shooting and for making money. And we've been working trying to get these penalties up high enough to kind of get these folks to say it's not worth the risk anymore. So I'm for this bill, and I know the penalties are bad, making it a felony, but these guys are felons and taking those genetics out of our big game population. Thank you.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the bill, it's a big surprise to a lot of you, I'm sure. I've been down this primrose path for 5 years now, and every year we hear about how we've got to have this felony, we've got to raise this penalty. If we don't, they're going to kill these animals. Well, you know what? The good vice chairman, the former vice chairman of TRW, said it best. It isn't working, and it's not going to work. All we're doing is continuing to do things that try and make us feel good, and the deterrent doesn't work. Why don't you come back? Actually, I should bring a second reading amendment giving you capital punishment for this. Thumbs up. I don't know where it ends. It's obviously not the solution to the problem. And quite frankly, it's starting to get absolutely ridiculous. I mean, you can go home and commit domestic violence against your spouse, and it's less than any of these penalties. I mean, I think we've gotten completely out of whack. I would urge you to vote no.
Chairman Korber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the bill. If this is about serial killers of big game, then I guess we need to make the first or even the second one the felony, but not the third. And if you look at the handout, there was a fair amount of information that was given to us on the handout that there were 142 violations, 68 resulted in conviction. Then they go on to say that factors contributing to non-conviction include lack of evidence at crime scenes, remote locations, lack of witnesses. It would seem to me that the issue is bigger than just being able to charge the penalty as a felony and increase the crime. So that there has to be a different way of handling these. I don't know if they can be charged with a felony for destruction of property of a certain amount. I mean, maybe we need some creative prosecution here to help us deal with these cases. But if it's that serious, why wait for the third arrest? On and against the bill.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill, and for a very different reason that hasn't been discussed really yet. Not the penalty part, but for extradition purposes. Here's what happens, especially in those communities that are near the border. They come across the border, they will do a kill, take it back, or take primarily the head or the cape, back over the border. If it's just a misdemeanor, it's very difficult to come to the decision to extradite based on a misdemeanor. It can be done, but not real likely. Felonies are what you extradite for, mostly because it's a long process to extradite folks back. And if you're going to do extradition, you're going to want to make sure that there is a felony somewhere in there. So on and for the bill, primarily for that reason, getting them back into the state so we can do the prosecution in the first place.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, on and for the bill, you know, one of the reasons this bill's brought is because of the problems we had up in the northwestern part of the state. Got one gentleman that first time didn't stop him, second time didn't stop him, and the way the laws are, third time wouldn't stop him. I mean, he goes out there and he kills some trophy game. And he doesn't care. He doesn't care. And I think jail time is about the only thing that may stop him. And a felony should be brought on this. Now, you can tie it into that what you do on humans is you're doing more with this than you do with humans. So what? I mean, that's another committee and another issue. And probably ought to be considered. But we've got a wildlife issue that we need to take care of. Not for first offenders, not for second offenders, but for third offenders. These are blatant violations of the law. They go out there, kill an animal, take the head, and leave everything else. And we do better than that. Don't tie two things together. Let's stick with this issue. It's an important issue. Vote for the bill.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, now let's not lose sight of the fact what I first, when I first explained the bill. The fines are no different than they are in the law at the present time. We're only adding 1 year of jail sentence. The real issue, the good gentleman from the land of the Tetons explained. The fact, the extradition is a very important part of this because many of these people that really do these things don't live in our state. We're pretty proud of our animals and we take pretty good care of them. And the local people kind of watch out for some of the people that you've seen locally and you've heard about locally. That's what the essence of this bill is about. Let's not lose track of this. So let's, as far as you know, the human versus the animal, ladies and gentlemen, these animals only have us to look after them. The humans have a lot of other people that can help them with what they do. We have organizations, we have other laws, we have halfway houses, we have all other kinds of things. These poor animals are being slaughtered for profit for the great part of it at their most vulnerable time. On and for the bill.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As someone who deals with this issue quite a bit in my profession, I can tell you this will not affect 99% of Wyoming folks that get out there and hunt and fish and use resources properly. This is a situation where you have some of the worst offenders, the worst type of offenders. And a lot of those offenders, and I think it's important to emphasize again, aren't from Wyoming. They're from the state to the north or the state from the south. In my area, the state from the north, where these folks come down, they don't care one bit about what our rules and regulations are. They don't care one bit about the value of the resource to our people in Wyoming. They care about a bloodlust. And I'll tell you, the representative from Hot Springs County had a good point. Maybe we should look in future sessions about making this a second offense within a 10-year period. But I think this is a good start. In order to have a felony, it does help with the extradition of these terrible terrible hunters. I mean, it's just it's an awful situation. This is not something that affects the majority of Wyoming sports people. This is a very narrow, targeted element that exists, and we see it over and over and over again. So I would urge you to support this bill. It is a resource for law enforcement, and it's a resource to protect our valuable resource, our wildlife. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The question being called, all those in favor of Chairman McComey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 85 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 85 has passed Committee of the Whole. Division being called for, all those in favor of Senate File 85, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. Oh, right. Okay. Senate File 85 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 144. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 144, introduced by Senator Nicholas, an act relating to administration of government, state-funded construction projects preference provisions. This bill was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, signed, representing Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Berger?
Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming we're on Senate File 144.
Yes, ma'am.
Good. Then I can talk about this bill. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 144 do pass. And ladies and gentlemen, I have handed out a kind of a synopsis of the bill. But the first thing I'd like to tell you about state-funded construction projects and preference provisions is that this is for Wyoming businesses, their employees, and for Wyoming projects. Basically putting Wyoming to work first. I think many of you as policymakers had contact from state contractors and various folks around the state. You also know that we had discussions early in the session. It seems so long ago that we started working on Senate File 144. But basically what this bill does is make the open bid process transparent and accessible to Wyoming businesses. What I'd like to do is just walk through a few parts of the bill just to make certain you have the highlights. It's procurement requirements on capital construction projects for this fiscal biennium, so it ends on June 30, 2012. This is a temporary fix. What we are hoping for as you go through the bill is that we will see how this is, if passed, implemented, how it works, the process with the guidelines that we've put in the bill, and then midsummer to late fall, hopefully the Joint Appropriations Committee will look at the process, and if it is working, we will then propose future legislation based on the outcomes. So that's the real reason for the bill. I think that it provides the transparency that is necessary. And it basically affects on page 2 the projects that are not under design or contract before January 17, 2011. So that's this session when we started discussing the importance of Wyoming contracts. And then looking at the waiver process and the open bid process and how those projects would be performed and making certain that they're would be the
70% contract work by subcontractors. And also in all of this is waiver language to deal with when there would be exceptions to that. And basically it has to do with a unique situation where we would not have a Wyoming contractor that would be able to provide that work. And an example is we just had a new facility done in this area where it is geothermal. And there is no one, to my knowledge, that is fully capable of doing a large-scale project. So that would be the type of an example where there would be a waiver on that. And then moving through the 5%, which is at the bottom of page 3 on contractor preference, and then going into the requirements of how you would get a waiver and who would be responsible for making those decisions. And basically we have almost a page 4 to 5 dealing with the directors of the different entities that are primarily responsible for our large projects throughout the state of Wyoming. And that's our directors, for example, the University of Wyoming, School Facilities Commission, the community colleges, and the State Building Commission. Now, also you'll be pleased to know that, and I've got a standing committee amendment, which I'll move after I work through the bill, that we had in there that the co-chairman would be a part of with the governor on making waiver changes, and we've made that to be the Joint Appropriations Committee would be responsible for that. The other big component that came into this whole process of contractor preference was with furniture, fixtures, and equipment. And we found that that became as critical, really, as the bid process for the construction itself. And we worked on some language there, which I'll also have in the standing committee amendment for you. And that goes through page 6. And really the intent there was certainly to make certain that Wyoming businesses could offer those fixtures and furniture and supply those properties. And also high priority was preventing abuse. And then going on to page 7, it works with the progress of the payments. Dispute and how all the retainage has taken place, because we've also put in some language there to do some auditing of the process and going back to 2008. So that's a part of what we're trying to do there. And then we added some language, which will be in the standing committee also at the bottom of page 7, as to who are Wyoming design firms and planning as far as architectural and engineering. So that'll be a part of the standing committee amendment. Then on page 8, it's the reporting and auditing component to the bill so that we can find out, are there real claims that we need to address that have really were anecdotal in the conversation as we started the contractual preference? And so we want to review that. And then giving the governor some authority to be able to, and flexibility to be able to modify some of these agreements, because we're on a limited time basis here. So we wanted to make certain that there was some flexibility with this proposed legislation. And then the last page is on page section 2 and 3 is to deal with the statutorial changes that could be proposed by the JAC committee. And with that, I would go ahead and move the Standing Committee 1 to Senate File 144. And so basically what it's doing is on page 5, it's taking out the co-chairman of Joint Appropriations and making it the Joint Appropriations Committee. On page 6, we're adding furniture on line 19 and 20. And then on page 6, on line 21, in order to deal with those unique features that it's possible that we wouldn't be able to do a public bid for on that, and also to deal with some of the facilities, in particular like schools, that have certain items that are consistent with all of their construction projects, how we would work around that. And we've put in language there that states that after specialized, or that an item or type of furniture, fixture, equipment is so unique or uncommon that they would get a waiver. I think that what we learned from the committee work that we did and the several meetings that were held earlier in the session is that there is a lot of discussion that goes on in the review of the design bid and build process.
And then adding to the professional firms, we included the statutory language that we have that includes architectural and engineering. So that is the standing committee amendment. And if there are no questions on the amendment, I'd ask for a favorable aye.
Okay, the question being called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 144. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 144 has passed Committee of the Whole, and we're back on the bill. Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had two questions. The first question, number one, I think it's a great bill. I like how the bill's structured. I think it's a great idea, especially in this area of the design bill or the alternative design delivery method. I think there were some gaps in there, and I'm glad to see that we're filling in those gaps from when we adopted that procedure a few years ago. My concern has to do, moreover, on page 8, and it really is not substantive to this particular subject matter. I'm just curiosity as to policy decision of this body. On page 8, line 21, it says the governor may modify by executive order. I have never seen a bill where we pass a bill that says this is the law of the land has been determined by the legislature, but then we say to the governor, but hey, if you can do it a better way, you know, go ahead and pass an executive order that either trumps us or changes what we said or alters what we said. I find that to be an interesting concept, but I'm not sure if that's a great idea. My second concern is why we're making this temporary and studying it. If it's such a good idea, let's just do it. I mean, if it turns out to be a bad idea, we'll come back next year with a law to remove it. But this idea that we're going to put it into effect for 1 year, and then it goes away after a year unless somebody brings a bill to make it permanent, I'm not sure why we're doing that. And so I guess my curiosity is, why are we allowing the governor to change our laws at his whim? And then number two, why are we making this just for a year? And if a second reading amendment to take those two out would mess anything up, if that's already been discussed and somehow that's already been worked out, I was just wanting to know.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To try and answer the good Speaker Pro Tem's question, on page 8 at the bottom, paragraph D there, where the governor, as you pointed out, can modify with executive order, is very unusual. I don't know if I've ever seen it as well, but really we did that simply because we're kind of doing this on the fly. I mean, we haven't spent an interim of work on it, and we're working the bill kind of through the thing and correcting as we go, and I think it'll need some more work as we move on, but so it's never been done, and I guess the thing is there is this gap with the alternative delivery methods, and we want to take a year. We have a lot of construction projects, and let's just see and learn from it a little bit and come back and maybe provide a better fix, not only for the alternative delivery, but also the design bid build, I think, also needs another look at it. So that's why, really, is to not get ourselves in a bind by doing something we didn't really intend to do.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm, at this point, not as enthralled with this bill as some of the other speakers on this. The way I see this, what we're doing is we're making a shift in who benefits and who doesn't benefit in this, in the sense that, you know, we're really exposing taxpayers that are financing these state-funded construction projects to a 5%, a maximum of 5% premium on construction costs. So if you look at us as being consumers and we're building some project, we're by doing this, we're saying we're willing to appropriate up to a maximum of 5% more to build this building, so we can have local contractors do 70% of the work. And, you know, I don't know if this is bill was spawned by, are we trying to retaliate against other states that have been doing that to our contractors? in the state to the south of us, or maybe the one to the east or north or west of us. I mean, it looks like, to me, there maybe there was some possibility that other states are doing the same thing, so we're going to get even and make sure that they don't have as good a break here as our contractors from Wyoming have in their state. And I don't know if that's the case or not, but even if it isn't the case, anytime you do something like this, it begets more reciprocal agreement or reciprocal actions on the part of neighbors. You know, we can go back. I'm not going to go back to this. I know you don't want me to, but this reminds me very much of the old Smoot-Hawley Act in the 1930s, where we were going to pull ourselves out of the Depression by putting confiscatory tariffs on any goods that come into the United States. Well, the next thing you know, all our major importing countries said, well, if you're going to do that, we're not going to take anything from you guys either. And everybody sat around there and scratched their heads and wondered why the Depression wouldn't get over with. And it turned out that it took, a world war to get us out of that Depression. And, of course, that was, by default, a canceling of the Smoot-Hawley Act when we were exporting and importing war goods. The kind of thing that I think we need to watch here is, will this cost consumers, the people that are getting the state funds, if it's a local government, and they find, well, they're getting state funds and they're going to have to go along with this. And, you can translate it into a square footage of a building. You know, we're going to have up to 5% less square feet in a building if we're going to have to pay a 5% premium on work. The other thing is just kind of the mathematics of how it works when we talk about the bid amounts exceeding 105% and needs to make a 70% requirement. How does that, I read the language here and it looks like there's some attempt to kind of explain that, but what happens if you got a bunch of subcontractors and some of them don't meet the 105%, their bid is in excess of 105% of the low out-of-state bid, and then you got some that aren't, and you add them all up and you come up with a total that's less than 70% of this work. And, I'm just wondering if this is going to encourage general contractors to do business in the state when they have this kind of aberration from a free market to contend with. And especially since it isn't really apparent, how you're going to get down to the real arithmetic of that 70% and matching that up to all these individual subcontracts, and some over 105%, some under 105%. Does it work? Does it work like it for an average? If a Wyoming contractor came in at only 80%, does that have an overall impact on the 70% of what Wyoming work? Anytime you do one of these things, it's kind of, it's a double-edged sword. You know, you're going to be helping somebody, but it's going to be hurting someone else. And in this case, you're going to be hurting the state budget, I think. And to the extent that there's matching grants out there and things, you're going to be hurting your own local government's budgets and others who are improvement districts and everything else. It might be in some kind of a participating arrangement with state funds. So right now, I'm not too hot for this, but I'm willing to listen to more of what you got to say about it.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, this is a very complex issue, and it was actually, the discussion started in December with the various facility managers, the various entities that are actually doing the construction development of the appropriations that we give on capital construction. The 5% is statutory. That's already there in play. That isn't something new that we're doing, and we're trying to address this issue in working with all the different suppliers in the state of Wyoming and contractors and make certain that it is a fair and transparent project. It comes from many different sets of complaints, and again, coming back to being complex, we brought the players to the table many times. This bill, the reason it is temporary fix is because it is complex, and we don't know if this direction will work and fix the problem to make certain that we are getting the best product for the best dollar by the best folks. But that's what our goal is. And we hope that by bringing all the stakeholders to the table, having gone through several revisions of the bill that's before you in order to see if we could meet those needs and also stay competitive within the state of Wyoming. I don't think this has anything to do with fencing out some other group of folks from another state. This has to do with addressing for Wyoming being the most productive and effective and cost-saving that we can possibly be, and allowing Wyoming citizens the first opportunity at a project. But I would say, based on the capital construction that has gone on over the last decade and will proceed ahead, considering just school facilities commissions alone, the budget that we've proposed at $180 million, we need more oversight and we need more data and more information. So that is the reason for, back again originally to the temporary reason for this legislation, so we can review, is it working? Because if it isn't, we want to catch it before we make something permanent in the legislation. This has been a discussion really on contractor preference for at least a minimum of 4 years, if not 6 years, that we've had this debate, and we've finally been able to take an opportunity and look at how do we think we could better the legislation. As far as the 70%, we don't know for sure. We have seen all kinds of discussion with the contractors at risk, managers, the bids, the process, looking at the different subcontractors and trying to see if this is the right formula and if we are going to get the right kind of results. So I think, we're coming on to a construction season. We're coming on to projects, and hopefully by the end of the summer we'll have a good review of what that looks like. We used the date January 17th just so we had a cutoff of being able to capture those projects that were under that process and see what that would look like, and then ending it with June 30th. So that's kind of my view on the bill at this point.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This has gone on longer than that because I remember bringing a bill before the Appropriations Committee regarding construction manager at risk and all kinds of things about 10 years ago. The 5% preference has been in here for a number of years, longer than I've been in the legislature. But what I did want to ask the good chairman of appropriations, I met with a bunch of these contractors back in December, along with the prime sponsor from down across the Capitol building, and it seemed to me that we were talking about making some of these out-of-state contractors become in-state contractors by having a minimum of 15 or 20 people. What we find out in some cases that these out-of-state contractors have an office front or a street front or a street address, but they really don't have an office in the state. The one that has done a lot of work in the capital city and around has bought some land and is building a building in Wyoming. But a lot of these out-of-state contractors, and this is what's pushed this bill along, is they're just here, and then all of a sudden they're gone, and we can't get back at them if there's some work that has to be done whether it's a school district or whatever, these guys are gone and you can't get them to come back and do that work that they're supposed to do. So I'm just wondering where forcing them to be a member of Wyoming and have a storefront and so forth, rather than just a storefront but an honest business in Wyoming, where that ended up. And I hope that when you do get to study it, that you'll look at that too.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking on and for Senate File 144, many of those of you that have had school construction in your school districts know that we've been using a method called let me find my place here. It's called the Construction Management at Risk Alternative Method. And we have brought out-of-state contractors into our school districts, and many of them have not hired subcontractors, Wyoming subcontractors or suppliers. They use various business techniques to use the information that we have here as subcontractors, providing them base numbers, base bid numbers, that they can go out and shop. That precludes many of our subcontractors from being competitive. That takes dollars away from our communities. That takes dollars away from our working families. This bill actually addresses the current environment as it is. It's for 2 years, I understand, but it addresses those inequities faced by Wyoming contractors, Wyoming subcontractors, Wyoming suppliers. Because many times they're competing with like the former speaker said, an out-of-state contractor that can leave the state of Wyoming and not have to face the consequences of, many of our suppliers they're dependent on a cash flow, a positive cash flow getting paid for their suppliers. And in some cases, the general contractor is very slow in getting that payment to them, 60, 90, 120 days out. We as Wyoming folks would like to see those cash flows positive, helping stimulate our economy. This is a good bill, folks. On and for the bill.
Representative Lux.
Mr. Speaker, rising on in favor of Senate File 144, I try not to get up here very often to waste time or to say things that have already been said unless it's something that's very important to me or important to the state of Wyoming. We've talked through this session about economic development in the tunes of tens of millions and sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars we're willing to talk about. There's already in existence in statute is a 5% preference. This bill is helping to make that come true, and it also is probably the largest economic development thing we could do for the state this year. The number of dollars that turn over in our community as a result of large construction jobs, if done with local contractors, is overwhelming. They buy 20 trucks locally. They buy heavy equipment locally, and it trickles down to every one of us. This is really, really important, and I hope that you all would vote in favor of this. Thank you.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, just to clarify, the design bid build process is already in statute. It's been there for a number of years, the 5% preference, the 70% requirement for in-state subs. And what we're trying to do is there's an issue out there with alternative delivery methods, the CMAR method, the design build method, And, you know, to be honest, our schools for the most part are doing a pretty good job. Community colleges, A&I, but there's been some issues really with our university, and that's just the fact of the matter. But there's no 70% requirement for in-state subcontractors, and so here's what is happening: you'll have whoever the construction manager is will shop bids for subcontractors. They'll get this bid and they'll say, well, they can do it for this much, and then they'll talk to somebody they've used in the past and they can do it for this much and drive it down. And there's no requirement to use Wyoming folks in this process at all. And this is not going on in everything, but it's going on in a significant amount of our construction. And so this will simply put it on kind of the level table where we're going to have an opening, a public opening of subcontractor bids. Everything's going to be bid. We're going to try to stick with the law that 70% of the subcontracts, that's where most of the money's at, is going to be Wyoming folks, unless these provisions that you saw, if there's not enough of them or if it's extremely specialized, those kind of things, and we'll make that determination. But another key issue here is the furniture, fixtures, and equipment. And I'll just tell you what's going on in all of our CapCon is that you'll have guys come in and say, well, hey, I'll design your FF&E setup for free. And we'll do that as a little deal. And then the bid will be let. And then a subsidiary of that person's company will get the bid. And so it's written in such a way that, and this isn't benefits, this is all out-of-state folks. And so this does two things. It does the alternative delivery method, the design bid, and the CMAR method. We're going to look at it for a year and then answer some more on the good speaker pro tem. On the last page of the bill, page 9, it talks about in section 2 that the Joint Appropriations Committee will study this. We're going to bring in everybody from UWCC, the SFC, and A&I, and look at proposed changes in the next year. But back to the FF&E, and then that's so it does two things, the alternative delivery methods and the FF&E. We've got to get a handle on this because I think some of it's not being done in a real upfront manner. We want to have public openings of the bids, and may the lowest bid win. Well, that's not the case now. And we want to correct that, and we want to do it immediately before we roll out. You know, we're looking at another 150 in school CapCon. We're looking at 50 million more at the university and more at the state level as well. So I urge your strong support of the bill. Thank you.
Representative Madden.
Just thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one short thing. I just want to verify for myself that this Joint Appropriations Committee study, are you going to look at what the cost of a project was with these restrictive parameters in here as opposed to what it could have been? So we kind of get what each one of these projects cost us in extra dollars as a result of it. Is that the kind of study you're going to do, or is it going to be a cost-based study? I guess that's what I'm asking.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman Berger.
Chairman, good question. I don't know that. Based on how I thought it was written, it was looking at cost-based on what we have historically what we've done and what the projects are costing us, not comparing it to what it would be. I suppose we can look at that. Our focus has been on creating opportunities for Wyoming businesses.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to be supportive of this measure, as I believe I do understand how we're trying to cover the gap of our preference law to include at-risk as well as the design builder concept. Everybody said it's been there for a long time. In geological terms, it's really pretty recent. In the drafting of this, we've used the term contract, and then we were explicit on page 2, lines 23 and 24, talking about contracts requiring, and then we become very specific of construction manager at risk or designer builder, and then we go on with other contracts. And I just wonder that careful draftsmanship, making sure that we're consistent with the value of those words as we proceed through it. On the requirements and the waivers, as I understand. Using the illustration that we have in front of us, a building for a community college may be prescribed to adhere to this law, but they may also exempt themselves, and they can exempt it by the president and his chairman of the board of directors of a community college. And then the next line, and I understand that exemption would go to the governor and to the co-chairs of the Appropriation Committee, which I wonder if you really want to do that, but that's fine if it's there. But under page 5, line 11, you have for all other projects, comma, by the respective governing board. Do you really want to put that in there in the statute? Because it seems to me that you're providing a general exemption that they don't have to require, and maybe that's a little bit broader than you might have intended to go.
Any other discussion on the bill? Okay, question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Berger's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 144 do pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Okay, Senate File 144 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad everybody saved up their words over the three-day weekend. I move that the House, the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion has passed.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 33, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 79, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 134, recommended do pass. Senate File 45, recommended do pass. Senate File 72, Representative Croker announced a conflict on number 72, recommended do pass. Senate File 51, Representative Botten announced a conflict of interest on Senate File 51, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Senate File 138, recommended do pass. Senate File 147, recommended do pass. Senate File 85, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 144, amended, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Stepson, Chairman.
Representative Stepson.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole report is adopted. We're at that order of business, reading and signing of enrolled acts. The first enrolled act is House Enrolled Act 31. The reading clerk will read the enrolled act.
House Enrolled Act number 31, being original House Bill 18, an act relating to the quarantine of animals, being an act by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign enrolled act number 31, being original House Bill 18. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 32.
House Enrolled Act number 32, being original House Bill 109, an act relating to the Wyoming Infrastructure Authority, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About signed. Enrolled Act number 32, being original House Bill 109. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 33.
House Enrolled Act 33, being original House Bill 113, an act relating to the Wyoming Pipeline Authority being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign enrolled act number 33 being original House Bill 113. I have so signed. House enrolled act 34.
House enrolled act number 34 being original House Bill 7, an act relating to veterinarians being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign enrolled act number 34 being original House Bill 7. I have so signed. House enrolled act 35.
House enrolled act number 35 being original House Bill 80, an act relating to service process being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About signed and rolled Act Number 35 being original House Bill 80. I have so signed. House and Rolled Act 36.
House and Rolled Act Number 36 being original House Bill 99, an act relating to treatment of substance abuse being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign and rolled Act Number 36 being original House Bill 99. I have so signed. Senate and Rolled Act 46.
Senate and Rolled Act Number 46 being original Senate File 88. An act relating to crimes and punishment being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign and rolled Act Number 46 being original Senate File 88. I have so signed. Senate and rolled Act 47.
Senate and rolled Act Number 47 being original Senate File 89. An act relating to adult protective services being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign enrolled Act Number 47, being original Senate File 89. I have so signed. Senate enrolled Act 48.
Senate enrolled Act Number 48, being original Senate File 3, an act relating to campaign finance, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign enrolled Act Number 48, being original Senate File 3. I have so signed. Senate enrolled Act Number 49.
Senate enrolled Act Number 49 being original Senate File 23, an act relating to elections being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign enrolled Act Number 49 being original Senate File 23. I have so signed. We're at that order of business, third reading of the budget bill. And just prior to that, we're going to read some standing committee reports.
House Bill, Senate File Number 1, Appropriations, an Act relating to supplemental appropriations for the operation of the government. Standing committee report, your committee number 2, Appropriations, has reviewed Senate File 1. Pursuant to Joint Rule 14-1E, 1 and 2, the following lists are provided.
Pursuant to Joint Rule 14-1, F1, Senate File 0001 is placed directly on third reading for the purpose of explanation by the House Appropriations Chair. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, if you will go ahead and pull out your packet, which has the list of the Senate amendments, and then on the very back of your package are the lists of where we are identical, non-identical but similar, and then don't agree at all is basically how I'll put it, so non-identical at the bottom. So what I'd like to do is, I'm not sure if you've had a chance to look through your cheat sheet, but I'd like to just work off the cheat sheet, if I may, and just give you a bit of update on that. And then basically what we'll do is we will go into conference with the Senate and go through all of the amendments. We will first address the identical amendments, take those off the table. Then we'll address the next set of amendments, which are somewhat identical, and address the language differences if we can. There's a couple that have a dollar amount that is different that we might have to set aside and work with the non-identical category. Then we'll look at what the differences are between the House and Senate, which are basically financial. There are some directions that are words that make a difference too that we will discuss. So, and just so that you make sure we're on the right page, at the top, basically when it says Senate Amendment Number 19, which is a cleanup amendment. That, if you recall, is our technical amendment where we, any errors that we caught in drafting the budget bill that we proposed to you, we tried to clean up those areas. And then what we've done with the identicals, too, that are important is making certain that you have the amendment. So you should have your packet of amendments if you want to look at your House amendments also to just compare. But you do have a list of the wording for all of the Senate amendments. And then we use the agency number, the agency name, and the overview of what the amendment was addressing on that. So I would propose that we just move down to the non-identicals, and the first one being Amendment 5 to Senate Bill 1, and that's in regards to developmental disabilities in the Department of Health. And the Senate accepted the amendment of the 4% increase to providers at a projected dollar amount of $2,246,135. So that is one where we do not have an amendment, and we will have to address that and negotiate on that one. One of the next amendment with community colleges, Senate Amendment 7, deals with state aid of $45,000 to community colleges, and we do not have that amendment in our House amendments. So again, because it has $45,000, we will address that with the Senate. And then the next box is with community colleges. And through amendments and additional amendments, they came out pretty close to the same language that we have. So we have just a couple of things there that we need to technically clean up with that amendment. Going on to local government distribution, that has to do with $10 million direct distribution. And again, we're down to semantics there, just on some of the wording that we need to deal with. So hopefully that one we can adjust. And the next component is Senate Amendment 2014, dealing with the quiet zones for railroads. And if you remember, our budget, JAC budget proposal was $6 million for that project, and the Senate amendments reduced it by $3 million. So we will have to work on that issue. And the next one, Senate Amendment 2017, with A&I has to do with the CIO, and actually through the JAC process we had gone back and forth whether that CIO should serve at the governor's pleasure or at the A&I director. And so now it's back to the Senate side wanting at the pleasure of the governor, so we'll have to deal with that issue. Then if you remember, the House did not accept a $1 million proposal for exploratory or relocation of the governor's residence, and the Senate did. And then on the next one, Senate Amendment 2030 has to do with the state lands operations with the fence at Ranch A, and we have some wording differences on our amendments. Then following up with that is the University of Wyoming, and we had an academics evaluation report, and again, we have differences in the language for that report. In Senate File 3011, the data center recruitment, the Senate added language to deal with industrial siting, that they would be waived from that. It has to do with, I think the typical language has to do with manufacturing, and basically what a data storage does is develop, I think, electrons or something like that, so it's not really equipment. So we'll have a discussion on that to get more information there. The next one has to do with, I think it's a program that's typically called DARE, with substance abuse and adding bullying to it, and the Senate added on their Amendment 3012 $100,000 for that program. We did not do that. The next one has to do with a review and reorganization of the Professional Teaching Standards Board. And as you know, we're doing quite a bit of work in that area with data collection for teacher certification and the direction that we're moving with the Department of Education on that. So we'll go through that amendment. And then on the Amendment 3016 with the School Foundation Program, which goes back to the original discussion on the Senate File 106 and dealing with recapture districts and resource reallocations, this amendment is very different from ours. This had to do specifically, I believe, with one school district where ours took all of the recapture school districts into consideration. So, on that. And then we have a transfer of funds just from the Permanent Land Income Fund, Omnibus Fund, to the Permanent Fund, so building up that corpus. And we work off of the interest there, too. So we'll get more information from the senators on that. And the next one has to do with an amendment that we did not have on the judicial branch, and if you remember back with market pay and the increases that we did for state employees, this amendment takes some of that funding and addresses the judicial branch. So we do not have this amendment, so we will have to work on that, and hopefully we'll have more information on how that would impact the overall picture of compensating the market pay that we were thinking at for state employees was at about 91%. Then going down to the major differences, that has to do with the ethanol tax with the Department of Transportation, the $3 million that we just appropriated out of the general fund that the Senate does not have. It failed over there. The next component has to do with rural hospitals and electronic health records. They do not have that amendment. And the third one has to do with impacts to southeastern Wyoming, in particular fire departments. And we have $1 million on the House side, and the Senate does not have that. And then we also added two positions to DEQ to work on the backlog, which was an appropriation of $1.5 million, and I believe our amendment states that we take those positions out of that component. And those are our difference. And at the bottom, you see what the dollar amount is. So I could stand for questions if you have any, or we will proceed ahead with a conference committee and plan to meet soon.
Any questions on any of the budget amendments? All right. Pursuant to Joint Rule 14-1, Senate File Number 1 will be referred directly to the conference committee of five members from each House to meet to resolve the differences between the Houses with respect to both budget bills, House Bill 1 and Senate File 1. And House Conference Committee on the Budget will be Representative Berger, Chair, Representatives Stewart, Wallace, Escobel, and Harshman. We're at that order of business. Request to concur with Senate amendments to House bills. The first message for our consideration is message number one on House Bill, message number 287, House Bill 5. And I will call on Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Okay, Okay, I move message number 287 to Senate File 5 and ask for your concurrence. And ladies and gentlemen, if you recall, what this has to do with is the University Revenue Bond Supplemental Coverage. And what the Senate did over with the bill was to change the bond coverage. And basically, what currently the University of Wyoming is at a debt service coverage at 3.86. And this would tighten up the servicing cost and make that 2.5 to 1. So I think it's a favorable commitment to put in place for servicing that debt. And if you have any questions, I'd stand for them.
Any questions? We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 5. A majority of the elected members is required. Chief Kirk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickrey.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison excused. Edmonds.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer. Greer, Green,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparic excused, Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Peterson excused, Peterson,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Simlick,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Vronish,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
Greer,
excuse.
Greer excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 56 ayes, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 5. The next message for our consideration is message 289 to House Bill 37. Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move concurrence on House Bill, message 289, House Bill 37, and ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, this was the one that where we were had appropriated the money and said that the archives could start studying how to upgrade their electronically their archives and this type of thing, and the appropriation chairman asked them to bring back some more information on it, but there was another issue, and it seems like there's bill after bill after bill comes wanting money to do this very thing. His concern was maybe we should be more focused, and that's what this amendment does. This is a real push for what the Appropriations Committee can do, because it's not saying yes or no to the amount of money, but it actually legislated a little bit, but it's in the same section. And it says, well, for this money to be spent, A&I will work with the A&I CIO, and will all of these other agencies that want to do this are now going to be focused going through one agency so that we do not have all these myriad of different types of electronic forms out there. I think it's a step in the right direction, but it really was a push as far as legislating. But the Senate went along with it, so I ask your favorable consideration because I think it's a good idea.
We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 37. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickrey.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison excused. Edmonds. Eklund. Eklund. Esquivel. Freeman. Gay. Gingery. Goggles. Greer excused. Green. Harshman. Harvey. Hunt. Illaway. Yagi. Kasparic excused. Croker. Crone. Lockhart. Laux. Lubnow. Madden. McKim. McComey. Miller. Moniz. Nicholas. Patton. Peasley. Pedersen excused. Peterson. Petroff. Korberg. Roscoe. Semlick. Shepperson. Steward. Stubson. Teeters. Throne. Braunisch. Wallace. Swanitzer Dan. Swanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker, I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Gay, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 52 aye, 4 no, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 37. The next message for our consideration is message 290 to House Bill 63. Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence with on message 290 to House Bill 63, Subdivisions Water Study. I've talked to the sponsor of that particular bill, and he feels that these are fine amendments, so I urge your aye vote.
You're voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 63. A majority of the members elected is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbuto. Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickrey.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison excused. Edmonds.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer excused. Green.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye. Yagi. Aye.
Kasparic excused. Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Lubnow.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen excused. Peterson.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlick.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Braunisch.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 56 ayes, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 63. The next message for our consideration is message 292 to House Bill 111, Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on House Bill 111 and urge your support. The other chamber decided the principle should be underlined, and that was their amendment to the bill that we sent to them. I urge your support.
We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 111. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbuto.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickrey.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft. Davison excused. Edmonds. Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer excused. Green.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparic excused. Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Lubnow.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey. Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
no.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen excused, Peterson,
aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlich.
Aye.
Shepperson. Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Vronish.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 55 aye, 1 no, 4 excused.
By your vote, you voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 111. The next message for our consideration is message 293 to House Bill 143. Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker, I move concurrence on message number 293 to House Bill 143. And urge your aye vote. This is basically a correction. This bill covers a manufacturing sales tax exemption and uses the NAICS code book, the 1997 edition, and it's actually the 1997 edition as amended. So that's what the two amendments are. And I urge your aye vote.
We're voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 143. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Davison,
excused. Edmonds.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer, excused. Green.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Illaway. Illaway. Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparic, excused. Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen, excused. Peterson.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlich.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Vronish.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 56 aye, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 143. The next message for our consideration is message 294 to House Bill 153. Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I move concurrence on message 294 for House Bill 153, Agriculture Gas Tax Refund Program, and this is a little English correction. The sentence that we sent over was the department shall establish by rule a form or specify the format for the refund under this subsection. And they changed it to the department shall, by rule, a form. Anyway, they changed it, specify the format for, to the format for applying for. And I urge your aye vote.
We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 153. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison, excused. Edmonds.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer, excused. Green. Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparic, excused, Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen excused. Peterson.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Simlick.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Steward.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Braunisch.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 56 aye, 4 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill number 153. The next message for our consideration is message 296 to House Bill 159. Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move concurrence with the Senate changes to House Bill 159. This is another English lesson from the other chamber, and they are correct. I would urge you to vote aye.
We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 159. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll. Stand by. Technical difficulties. We'll stand at ease till the sound of the gavel. The House will come to order. We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 159. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison excused. Edmonds.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer excused. Green.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparik excused. Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lauk.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey. Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen excused, Peterson,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Simlick,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Steward,
aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Braunisch.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Greer.
Aye.
Greer excused. Aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 57 aye, 3 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 159. The next message for our consideration is Message 298 to House Bill 13. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the adoption of Message 298 for House Bill 13 and would ask you to vote no. The Senate has a three-page conference committee request for concurrence on a two-page bill. That should be your first concern. Essentially, what the amendment does is it does the exact opposite of the intended legislation and actually adds another requirement to the Hathaway Success Curriculum. It also adds some language on page 3 that's very concerning, dealing with a waiver that could potentially be abused, and I have real concerns about the direction that they went with this bill. I'd ask you to vote no.
We are voting on the... Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd ask you to vote aye on concurrence with the Senate. I truly believe, and this was a bill that we talked a lot about with amendments to the Hathaway Success Curriculum. I don't want to go back into all of that, but I really think that the Senate amendments address a lot of the concerns we had. If you remember, the issue was adding in fine and performing arts or career and technical education, and the issue was, do we add it in addition to foreign language, or do we say foreign language, or fine and performing, or career tech? The Senate took it and split it out, where foreign language is still a requirement for honors and performance, and then it becomes an option for the other two categories of the Hathaway. The addition of the waiver, I think, is a really good one, because what it says is the department can waive the requirement for success curriculum coursework if, by receipt of written certification by the superintendent, that required coursework was not made available, they don't have to do it. That's a concern we've heard addressed here time and time again about some of the smaller districts that weren't able to offer courses that they needed to offer. This, I think, addresses it, that if they can't offer the classes that are required within the success curriculum, those can be waived. I'd ask you to vote aye on concurrence. Thank you.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would ask a concurrence on this as well. I believe that the waiver is a good compromise, that this gives the flexibility for students in the Hathaway curriculum to take the fine and performing arts and or the technical education. I do think that it is a good compromise measure, and I would encourage an aye vote on the concurrence. Thank you.
Anyone else? Representative Harshman.
Members, I'd encourage you to vote no on this concurrence. The real purpose of the bill was to give flexibility to students. And, you know, I argued pretty hard against the bill, and when it left here, I was kind of at peace with it. And partly a lot of the CTE teachers across the state beat me over the dome and let me know that, you know, when you think about it, like a fourth-year drafting student who wants to be an architect, those kind of things are pretty rigorous courses. And so I kind of came to peace with this deal, but as it got amended in the Senate, frankly, it's not about choice anymore. It's more requirements. So it simply keeps the foreign language and adds a fine and performing arts or a career technical education, 2 years of each of those. So it's not a substitute like it left here with more choice for kids. It's actually more requirements, less choice. And that's heading in the wrong direction. So I encourage you to vote no on this. This is really important for a no vote. Thank you.
Chairman Harvey.
Ditto.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaking against concurrence, the problem or the real concern I see is with the waiver. You have a waiver that deals not only with fine and performing arts, not only with vocational ed, you have a waiver that could allow them to waive any element whatsoever of the success curriculum that we've been working so hard to put together. And that's just a whole new kettle of fish. So please vote no.
Anyone else? Anyone else prior to the chairman? Question having been called, we are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 13. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbuto.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickery.
No.
Bonner.
No.
Bonner.
No.
Botten.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Childers.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison excused. Edmonds.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
No.
Gay.
No.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
No.
Green.
No.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
No.
Hunt.
No.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
No.
Kasparic excused. Croker.
No.
Crone.
Aye.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
No.
Lubnow.
No.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
McComey.
No.
Miller.
No.
Moniz. Nicholas.
No.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen excused. Peterson.
No.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Simlick.
No.
Shepperson.
No.
Stewart.
No.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters.
No.
Throne.
Aye.
Braunisch.
No.
Wallace.
No.
Swanitzer Dan.
No.
Swanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 14 aye, 43 no, 3 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to not concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 13. The next message for our consideration is message 299 to House Bill 74. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on message 299 and would also ask for your no vote. House Bill 74 has been modified on page 2, line 11, in a way that is significantly different from the House version. And I just would ask for your no vote.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would rise also and ask for a no vote on this. It's very imperative, as pointed out by the good chairman, but one of the reasons that we really want to look at, the LSO attorneys have pointed out to us that in the three amendments that transpired over on the Senate side, they neglected to carry through completely, and so on page 1, lines 2, 3, and 4, that language has to be modified. It's imperative that that follows the amendment, so therefore it is absolutely necessary we go to a conference committee, if nothing else, to straighten that out.
We're voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 74. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbuto.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickery.
No.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Childers.
No.
Connolly. Kraft, Davison excused, Edmonds, Eklund, Esquivel, Freeman, Gay, Gingery, Goggles, Greer, Green, Harshman, Harshman, Harvey, Hunt, Illaway, Yagi, Kasparic excused, Croker, Crone, Lockhart, Laux, Lubnow.
No.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
McComey.
No.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen excused. Peterson.
No.
Petroff.
No.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
No.
Simlick.
No.
Shepperson.
No.
Stewart.
No.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters.
No.
Throne.
No.
Ronish.
No.
Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
No.
Swanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker, I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Byrd, aye to no. Bonner, aye to no. Are there any other changes? Freeman, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 7 aye, 50 no, 3 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to not concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 74. The next message for our consideration is message 300 to House Bill 110. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on House Bill 110 and ask for your aye vote. What was done in the Senate is they moved the successor date up by about 4 years, and it has no ramifications with all of the bill that we had together. It just is an earlier start date on the definition of successor corporation. So I urge your aye vote.
We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 110. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison excused. Edmonds.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparic excused. Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
Aye.
Peterson excused. Peterson.
Aye.
Petrov.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Simlick.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Steward.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Braunisch.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 57 aye, 3 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 110. We are at that order of businesses of messages from the Senate.
Message number 316, Mr. Speaker. The Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills as below by the vote indicated. Senate File 88, expungement of nonviolent felonies. Aye 17, noes 12, excused 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 317, Mr. Speaker. The Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills as below by the vote indicated. Senate File 89, Adult Protective Services. Ayes 28, noes 1, excused 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 318, Mr. Speaker. The President appointed Senate conferees to meet with Life Committee Number 1 from the House on amendments to Senate File 71. The Senate conferees are Senator Christensen, Senator Bebout, Senator Hastert. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 319, Mr. Speaker. The bills as below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 7, Wyoming Veterinary Medical Practice Act 2. Ayes 28, noes 1, excused 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 320, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 8, Wyoming Traditional Food Act. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 23, noes 6, excused 1. The Senate asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 321, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 20, Medicaid Reimbursement of Services. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 26, noes 3, excused 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 322, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 50, Health Insurance Exchanges. The House bill listed above passed the Senate on the third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, ayes 27, noes 2, excused 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 323, Mr. Speaker, the bills as below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 80, Service of Process in Family Violence and Stalking Cases. Ayes 29, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 324, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 81, Vacant Land. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 29, noes 0, excused 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 325, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 88, Guides and Outfitters. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 28, noes 1, excused 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 326, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 99, Substance Abuse Treatment Funding Awards. Ayes 26, noes 3, excused 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 327, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below failed to pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 158, Rule Against Perpetuities. Ayes 9, noes 20, excused 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 328, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 217, Production States Agreement. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 29, excused 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 329, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 246, National Guard Disposal of Land. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 28, noes 1, excused 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 330, Mr. Speaker, the Senate adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing the bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 39, Health Litigation Fund. Ayes 10, noes 19, excused 1. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 331, Mr. Speaker, Senate File 128, Abandoned Vehicles, Storage Expenses. The Senate adopted the Joint Conference Committee No. 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 28, noes 1, excused 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 332, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 1, General Government Appropriations. The Senate has completed consideration of the budget bill. In accordance with JR 14-1G, the bill has been referred directly to a conference committee to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments for final consideration by both houses with respect to the budget bills, House Bill 1 and Senate File 1, and the amendments thereto. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 333, Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills listed below. By the vote indicated, Senate File 3, Campaign Finance Organizations, I 16, noes 13, excused 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 334, Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with a like committee, number 1, on the House on amendments to House Bill 1. The Senate conferees are Senator Nicholas, Chairman, Senator Meyer, Senator Peterson, Senator Von Flattern, Senator Hastert. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 335, Joint Conference Committee reports adopted. House Bill 124, National Guard Emergency Professional Licensing. The Senate adopted the Joint Conference Committee No. 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 28, noes 1, excused 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 29, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Stewart, Wallace, excused, Pedersen, signed, representing Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 70, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Stewart, Wallace, excused, Pedersen, signed, representative Berger, Chairman.
Appointments of joint conference committees, House conferees for Senate File 71, Representative Yagi, Chairman, Representatives Gingrey and Petroff. House conferees for House Bill 13, Representative Teeters, Chairman, Representatives Blake and McComey. House conferees for House Bill 74, Representative Edmonds, Chairman, Representatives Croker and Roscoe. Committee announcements. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9 will meet Thursday afternoon upon adjournment to discuss the final joint interim topics for minerals.
Chairman Corbett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment today to discuss interim topics in room H-17.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, Appropriations number 2, will meet upon adjournment to continue working Senate File 139. And then tomorrow morning, your conference committee for the budget will meet starting at 8 o'clock in room 204.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your conference committee on Senate File 101 will meet in Senate Education tomorrow morning at 8:30.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee travel will meet in joint session with our Senate compatriots Thursday at noon recess, where we will complete our discussion on interim topics.
Vice Chairman or Representative Stubson.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. Speaker.
One second. Any other committee announcements? Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Wednesday at 9 a.m. in room H-17 to discuss interim topics. And also, if you remember from last week, there was a book on your desk from one of the state's organizations. The Labor, Health, and Social Services Committee, in an effort to give many viewpoints regarding the Affordable Health Care Act, has invited Christy Hara to present a roundtable session centered on the state legislator's guide to repealing Obamacare. And the whole House of Representatives is invited to attend. That is our regularly scheduled committee meeting. It will be held in room 302.
Your committee number 12, Rules, will meet today, Tuesday, February 22nd, 2011, upon adjournment in room 302 to consider Senate File 69, the Revisers Bill, and Senate File 95, Legislative Committee Membership. Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
For those of you who are finding that you have time on your hands, you are welcome to join us at 6:30 tomorrow morning for the Capitol Commission Bible study over in the atrium in the Hersler Building.
Representative Shepherdson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For those of you looking for a good lunch tomorrow, the FFA is having a fundraiser luncheon at the Texas Roadhouse. It's just a $10 donation, and you'll get a great meal. They will also do free delivery if we get together and have groups of 5 or more. So it's for a great cause and really good food tomorrow. Thanks.
Always looking for a good lunch. Representative Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
I just wanted to remind folks that if you've not made your commitment yet for the Governor's Prayer Breakfast, that it will be on Friday at 7 a.m. at Little America. It should finish up by 8:30, and you can take a contribution downstairs if you'd like, or have one of our pages take care of it for you. Thank you.
Any other announcements? Other announcements? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have a fairly aggressive day tomorrow so that we can get through all of these bills. I'm always surprised at our ability to thoroughly examine issues. I would like to get through Senate File 29 tomorrow. That's 12 bills on your list. There are some bills trickling from committee that should take some time, and we have some other second and third reading amendments. So to make sure that we get through in a timely fashion on Friday and are not here late at night at Friday, getting through Senate File 29 would be important. The first 10 bills tomorrow are concealed: Senate File 47, Senate File 107, Senate File 90, Senate File 121, Senate File 143, Senate File 70, Senate File 37, Senate File 50, Senate File 102, Senate File 25. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 9:30 tomorrow morning, February 23rd, 2011.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. House will stand adjourned until Wednesday, February 23rd, 2011, 9:30 a.m.